Towards the One, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Guidance. Thank you, Karimakita. Very beautiful. So today we continue the body of teachings from the Gathas of Hasaranayak Khan on respect. Respect. A respectful attitude is the first and principal thing in the development of personality. A respectful attitude is the first and principal thing in the development of personality. Not only respect towards someone whom one considers superior, but respect for everyone one meets in life. In proportion to what is due to him. Does anyone have a question mark over their head? It's interesting, isn't it? In proportion to what is due to him. It is through conceit that one gives less honor where more honor is due, and it is by ignorance that man gives more respect than what is due. Now, it sounds a little bit odd because we think, well, we're all children of the same God. Don't we all deserve the same proportion of respect? But let's remember, Anayak Khan came from a different culture than ours. This attitude is something that's really cultivated culturally. And it's something that's actually very beautiful as well, that I have to say I don't think we understand fully in this society. For example, if one were in India, one would not think of speaking to an elder or one in a position of more respect prior to being spoken to. So there wouldn't be, hey, can I, you know, it wouldn't be thought of. One wouldn't consider that abruptness unless one is addressed and welcomed to speak. It's a wonderful thing to teach, isn't it? It also instills in one a kind of discipline with speech and mindfulness of appropriateness, not to interrupt, so on and so forth. Children are also taught this. If someone is in a position of a teaching position, someone that has come for a teaching wouldn't consider sitting in a chair higher than that person, for example, or towering over them standing while that person is sitting, or even maybe sitting while that person's standing. You see, these are beautiful gestures that we don't give a lot of attention to. I remember after Joe and I were first married, we had stopped to have a little breakfast. That's a long story, and some of you know it because we had a whole thing in Rome. But when we were here, and Joe still does it after almost 10 years of marriage, he stands up when I leave the dinner table, especially if we're out, and he stands up when I come back, still. And there were some women having lunch with a little boy with maybe like a mother and a grandmother and an aunt or something. And they said to him, pay attention to the way this gentleman is treating her and you'll get a nice lady too. You know, it was a good information for that little boy. And Joe, of course, is quite humble, is probably embarrassed, and I'll hear about it later. But at any rate, he's such a good example in that way, you know, because he really does honor and respect those customs, you know. Another way we might think of it is sometimes if we give a disproportionate amount of anything, let's say food, we know what that can do. It might not be healthy. Or if we get a disproportionate amount of compliments, it also might not be healthy to someone. I know I've said it before, having lived amongst the Tibetans, they're not much on compliments because they feel that it develops the ego too much and doesn't really honor the true nature of one's being. So there's not a lot of flattery, we would say, going on. But that might be even considered, to a certain extent, inappropriate or vulgar. So, you know, think of these things in the cultural context, but also remember, old world maybe needs to come to new world a little bit. And when we act in a certain way, it's surprising how other people feel that vibration. You know, when Murshid Hidayat and I, Khan, came to visit the first time here, we went, my mother and Murshida Aziza, his wife, and I, we went to Brookside area for a little tea and a cake. And Murshid Hidayat is not someone of a very tall stature. He's not so tall. He's probably shorter than I am. But his presence is very dignified. Very, very dignified. And people would walk towards him, and without even, it was really wonderful to see, without even kind of knowing who he was in any way, there was just this natural tendency to kind of bow down and acknowledge him. It was quite extraordinary. And we'll get to a little bit of that in this teaching too, how that self-respect is so important and that sense of nobility, true nobility of the soul. But he's a great example of it, I would say. So again, it is through conceit that a man gives less honor where more honor is due, and it is by ignorance that man gives more respect than what is due. Respecting someone does not always require a desire to respect, but an act of respecting. One ignorant of this art may express respect wrongly. It is self-respect which makes one inclined to respect another. It is self-respect which makes one inclined to respect another. I might also add here, Mersha didn't say it, but I'm feeling it very strongly. It's that deep and abiding sympathy that we might have with another that calls forth that respect. A sympathy with their conditions, with their circumstances. That might put us very much in line with the appropriateness of respect which is given. Are there any questions or comments at this point? I can also proceed.
And of course, not other cultures, naturally, there's never do anything that you have to apologize for.
Yes. So, act in a manner that will evoke respect from others, that one must, and then that is, I think, exactly what Hazarada Nayak Khan is saying when he says that self-respect is what makes one inclined to respect others, but also what would give the inclination for one to be shown sign of respect. And Nayak Khan will elaborate more on that, but that's old wisdom, and we have to remember that was my mother that just spoke, and her mother also was not born in this country. She was born in Italy. But still the culture was very real for her, and there is a certain manner that is even different there as well.
And there's another thing about respect with the sympathy.
Sure, absolutely. Or a sympathetic heart that can resonate. Right, that's right. Okay. Thank you. The one who has no respect for oneself cares little if he respects another, or if respect is at all necessary in life. There's the short phrase. To respect means to honor. To honor, and one might say even to honor one's condition. Respect means to honor. It is not only bowing and bending or external action which expresses respect. A disrespectful person may bow his head before another and then strike that person on the face with his words. But sometimes one may act that way while others are watching to prove how respectful they are. But they may not altogether be. And then unconsciously say something that. You understand? True respect is from the attitude, which comes from the sincere feeling of respect. The outward expression of respect has no value without inner feeling. The outward expression of respect has no value without inner feeling. So we have some workmen in the neighborhood and a drill has just started. You might be hearing that. But how appropriate. Hopefully the teaching will be drilled deeply into our hearts. True respect is from the attitude which comes from the sincere feeling of respect. The outward expression of respect has no value without inner feeling. So these words and these kind of expressions is a pretense, you might say, without the true feeling. Inspired by a respectful attitude, a man expresses his feeling in thoughts, in speech, or action, which is the true expression of respect. A sincere feeling of respect needs no words. Even the silence can speak of one's respectful attitude. A sincere feeling of respect needs no words. Even the silence can speak of one's respectful attitude. May I continue? I have two more paragraphs. Typically, we kind of undulate back and forth between practice and the teaching, but this just feels like it's a beautiful flow. And when we continue throughout the class, which I promise won't be very long today, I'll read some key phrases to us and we'll contemplate them. So we're not leaving all of this behind, but we'll go deeper into it in our experiential. So it's just, let this kind of flow into your mind stream. Again, there'll be references to the teachings online, along with the audio and video recordings. And we'll also do some practice in the form of mantra or wazifa. Murshid goes on to explain the different expressions of respect. And he says this: there are three different expressions of respect. One is in the position or rank of a person who commands one to respect. So for example, in the military, you're expected to be respectful towards a senior officer. And he goes on to say, whether one is willing or unwilling, or under this situation, one cannot help having respect, which is nothing but an outer expression of respect. So while one may not have a true feeling of respect towards another in regard to their manner or behavior, because of their rank, one is compelled to display respect. The second expression of respect is when a person wishes to please another by his respectful manner, to let him feel how respectful he is and what a good manner he has. So in a way, this is more about the individual than the one to whom they're expressing their respect. They wish to please them and, you know, it's a pretense, one could say. By this expression, one has two objects in view. So by this one where you just wish to please another. He says the first one is to please another, and the other is to please oneself by one's way of pleasing. And then the third way, which is the best way, which I know all of us practice here. The third way is the true feeling of respect, which rises from one's heart. And if one tried to express it, one cannot express it enough. If one were able to express it fully, it can always be felt, because it is a living spirit of respect. If one were not able to express it fully, it can always be felt, because it is a living spirit of respect. Now here comes the background of Murshid seeping through. Listen to these words. The mark of people having tradition behind them, this is what I spoke of initially, this cultural background, this tradition. The mark of people having tradition behind them by birth, nation, or race shows in their respectful tendency that they've been cultured, that this has been developed in them. You know, sometimes I see people, we go to these retreats and different camps and we gather, and there are people that are at various parts of the path, some more advanced and delegated to be teachers or designated or acknowledged, and others that are, and this, it's an interesting thing to me, because I think that I often observe people being maybe overly friendly with people of a different standing in the community, or overly casual with people. And I think that in a way is a form of disrespect. You know, people in those positions are often, there are a lot of demands put upon them, not only to teach, but also what's going on in the background. They're sort of holding a space, you know, an inward space for the whole collective. And then people want to just kind of hang out or chit-chat. And I've always told people, if you want to be close to a teacher, serve them. Don't expect them to just hang out and have a Coca-Cola with you, or a tea, or chai, or what. ask them, can I pick something up and carry it for you? Can I bring you a glass of water? Can I, in India, people often ask me this, how can I get closer to them? Why don't you go ask if there's a market run you could do for them? Or see if there's a room that might need some attention. Or, you know, something like this that you can offer. This is how it's done. You understand what I'm saying? It's not hanging out, you know, slapping each other on the back, hey, we're going to be buddies and pals. I mean, it could be that, but be invited to be that. Don't come with that attitude first. Be invited into that. The mark of people having tradition behind them by birth, nation, or race shows in their respectful tendency. To them, disrespect, either on their part or on the part of another, means absence of beauty. Beauty. This beautiful manner. You know, I love this story. I'll tell it to you. I'm sure I've said it before, but while living in India, I was teaching English at a couple places. One was at a monastery, and the other one I had been invited to the Institute of Buddhist Dialectics. It's the school that the Dalai Lama established for advanced studies in Buddhist philosophy. And that institute was attached literally and physically to the monastery. The principal, or you might say dean of that school, had come to me and asked, we have some lamas, or Rinpoches, really very high teachers, that we're wanting to cultivate to go to the West. And while they know some English, they need to have more of the ability to converse and sort of the vernacular, you know what I mean, and learn a little bit more of how to communicate. And we'd really like for you to come and help with their pronunciation and also their, to understand the subtleties of the speech in the West. And so I was very happy to do that. And it happened that during this time, and it's interesting because, you know, these people appear, they say, do you recognize the Buddha? Maybe the Buddha's lying there on the floor. We don't know. Do we have the eyes to see? So there was this leper that was on the roadside there. And I'm telling you, horribly disfigured to the point where they really didn't have closure on their skin. I mean, it was like open. And, you know, the only thing they could do was have like a thin white cloth over them because, you know, nothing else could touch them. And the person, there's something, if you've ever known or seen anyone with leprosy, something happens to their eyes. You know, they turn an interesting color, and then the veins in the eyes become extremely red all around. And so this person was just, you know, to look at, you would say that's an ugly, horrible sight. And yet, even while they're on the side of the road, not really begging, but expecting a kind of, or offering oneself, one might say, as a sympathetic view of suffering and humanity, and not, and allowing people to give to them. It's a different kind of point of view. At first, the person seemed very almost ashamed when I would walk by. Like they didn't want to insult me with their appearance. But day by day, we came to know each other. And I would always stop in between my teaching at the monastery and the teaching at the dialectic school to speak with them. And over a period of time, that person, because they held within themselves, no matter what their condition was, a kind of eloquence, really was quite beautiful to me. So it doesn't matter how we may appear, there, that's what I'm trying to get at in terms of beauty. Beauty isn't a physical thing or something we do to ourselves. It was this beautiful being that was emanating through this terribly diseased body. That's what Murshid means by beauty. You understand? It's a condition and an expression that is beyond those letters that make up that word. And this being expressed that. And it was almost as if that being was there so that I could learn that. And then they disappeared. We were there no more. Isn't it interesting? So pay attention when beings come into your lives. Maybe they even agitate you a little bit with their whatever they might have. But they're there. They're there to help us to learn, teach us something. And remember that beauty has nothing to do with the gifts of our parentage. It's divine, and it's always within. Another example was, I was with a rather well-known designer. It's a living history, and we've become friends. And we were at a museum together, and we were in the Hindu section. And it's actually here at the museum we were together. If you go into the Shiva room, you'll see this yogini, an old woman that is a spiritual aspirant, very thin and kind of haggard looking, bony, you know, just. And he said to me, look at how beautiful she is. He could see the beauty in that figure because she was the embodiment of someone that had surrendered to spiritual practice. And then you go in the next room and there you have big old fat Ganesha with his big old belly dancing and, you know, and he's beautiful. Oh my God, it's like, who could refuse him? So it doesn't matter what this outward form is. It's these beautiful expressions that gives one's character beauty. Does this make sense? Does it? Mm-hmm. Is it meaningful or is it just blah, 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 beauty, blah, 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 respect? Like the cartoons of the cats and dogs, blah, 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 blah. Leo, blah, 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 Leo. So I'll read that piece again, and then only there's one or two more sentences in this part of the teaching, which is beautiful, will be complete. The mark of people having tradition behind them by birth, nation, or race shows in their respectful tendency. To them, disrespect, either on their part or on the part of another, means absence of beauty. Life has many beautiful things. Thank you, by the way. I think, Karima Gita, you brought to Taj. Did I see you bring these in? Thank you, darling. Okay. Life has many beautiful things. Flowers, jewels, beauty of nature, of form, of line, of character. But beauty of manner excels all. And all good manner is rooted in a respectful tendency. It is a great pity that the subject is not regarded as the most important one to be considered and to be developed, especially today. Now remind you, 1927, in February, is when Hazrat Anait Khan left his body, so that's when this teaching is being given. So he says, it is a pity that this subject, respect, is not regarded as the most important one to be considered and to be developed, especially today when the stream of the whole world is running in the direction of commercialism. How much more so it is today, yes. Which tends to the beauty of matter in gold and silver instead of the beauty of character and personality. And you know, it's even more so because everything now is really so intensified and so much quicker with technology. And I do want to impress upon people, especially those that are closest to me or those that are receiving the teachings this way, technology this discussion's even been had with His Holiness the Dalai Lama. Technology can be had, utilized to create weapons of mass destruction, or technology can be used to spread the Dharma and the teachings. And I'm really on that curve. I'm really trying to use the technology in that way. I know others are as well, but that's why I always invite people in our more immediate circle to be involved in that technology as well and communicate with each other worldwide in that manner. Yeah.